This is an interview with Valerie Clarkson, who served with the Air Force during Vietnam. This interview is being conducted at Valerie's home on the following date, August 13th, 2008. The interviewer is Catherine Plain. Okay, tell me about your background and life circumstances before you entered the military.
I lived in East Syracuse, New York. I was born there. No, I was born in Syracuse. And then we moved to California when I was 4 and a half. And then we moved back to New York, Syracuse, New York, when I was 8 and a half. And then I went to school there. And I went to a high school, East Syracuse, Manoa. And then when after I graduated, I worked in the accounting office. And then I just happened to think about what am I going to do with my life, because I wasn't earning enough of money to go out and earn enough of money to live on my own. And I didn't want to stay with my parents. And so an Air Force recruiter happened to call, and I thought, oh, okay, well. So I listened to him, and so I ended up joining the Air Force. And I went to basic training at Lackland Air Force Base in Texas. And then...
What was the reaction of your family when you joined?
My mother was happy that I did, that I did that. Of course, she was going to miss me, but I was, 20 years old, so, it's not that I was just a little kid. I was 20 years old at the time. And I worked for 2 years before I even thought about going in the Air Force. And I thought about taking a computer class or something like that, but at the time, but that didn't pan out. I couldn't afford that, so this was a good opportunity for me to get out of the house and get away, and I wasn't running away or anything like that. It was just an opportunity for me to get a profession and be able to, when I get out, then I can earn my own living.
Did the recruiter really have to convince you, or were you pretty eager to kind of join up yourself?
I was very open, I was listening, and I went in with an open mind, whether I, if I decided no, then I would say no, but I thought it was a pretty good idea for me to do that. So, for me to, get a profession. So I went into basic training, and then I went into casual, what they call casual. It's right after basic training in between your orders.
Well, let's talk about basic training a little bit before that.
I had kind of a hard time, but then I was able to do fine, and it was 6 weeks of basic training, and then I did pretty good in basic training. And
did you have any memorable people that you met there? Or?
Yeah, I met a girl. She was bunch of girls. It was on a Sunday, and we had Sundays off. We didn't have to do anything on Sunday, except we had to march to, this is during basic training, we had to march to eat and march back. That's the only thing we had to do. And a bunch of girls were sitting on the steps, and this one black girl, we were all joking around, and I was very naive. And I said, I just looked up at her and I said, do black people scan? Or, and so she lifted up her shirt and she said, see? And so there's a definite lying. They do tan. Anyway, because of the way I asked it and everything, we hit it off, and we became very good friends. And we were in casual together. And when we were in casual, that's when Hurricane Camille hit. And so we were in casual a lot longer, and it took a longer time for us to get our orders because of the hurricane.
So what is casual?
It's the place between basic training and when you're off, you're waiting for your orders. Mm-hmm. And most people, a lot of girls got their orders even before they got out of basic. Those that didn't get their orders it took a little longer. They went in for maybe a week, maybe a couple of days, and no more than 2 weeks. Well, it happened that we were in there a month because we had a two-week time there where absolutely everything just stopped because of Hurricane Camille. And all the guys had to go and help and clean up. And they helped to clean up and they helped to find bodies and all this stuff. And a lot of the ladies took a lot of the jobs that the guys were doing and went into the offices or whatever they were doing that we were allowed to go into at the time, because there were a lot of things that we could not do that ladies can do now. I opted to go into what they call the chow hall, the mess hall where you eat, and so we helped in the kitchen. I wanted to go there because I met, there's a lot of guys there, so that's why I volunteered for that. I had ulterior motives. Anyway, so Vivian, that black girl, and I, we decided that's what we were going to do. We were going to go in there. And so we had a lot of fun in there and talking to the guys, and we had to serve the food, you know, and dish up their food, you know, because we were behind the counter and all of that. We cleaned the tables and the floor and things like that that the guys would do. And
so that was normally the guy's job that you were doing.
Yeah. So we usually didn't have to do the floor, though. We cleaned off the tables and we, you know, cleaned off around where the food was and what we dished up and all of that stuff. And then we walked home after we were done. And so we did that morning and evening, lunch and dinner. So that was fun. We really enjoyed that. But it took longer for us to get our orders because of Hurricane Camille, because Biloxi was right next to Gulfport, and Gulfport was the eye of the hurricane. And about 2 weeks after, when we were finally allowed to leave the base, we got on the bus to go shopping, and we went to Gulfport, and it was a mess. This was even after 2 weeks of cleaning up. It was really a mess. And we were just surprised because my first impression when I first was coming into Biloxi, there's beautiful houses, a big, long, big, deep front yard, a road, sand, and then you see the Gulf of Mexico. It was just a little short beach before the road. And but when the hurricane hit, there was a big... I guess they call them tsunamis now, but anyways, big tidal wave that came. And they had the beautiful old Victorian homes, original homes from way back that were there, and they were just gorgeous homes. And after the hurricane, they were gone.
Wow.
When that tidal wave came in, it wiped out all the houses and everything that was on the beach. And luckily, the road stayed. But, and so during that time while we were there, we could see them, you know, starting to build house, you know, build their houses back up and everything. But they could never replace those little Victorian homes that were just gorgeous, you know.
So when the hurricane hit, did it hit the base where you were staying? Mm-hmm. So
did we had to go into a shelter, and we heard the wind blowing, and the walls were, we knew we were safe because the walls are about over 2 feet thick. They had... certain buildings that were designated hurricane shelters. And so we were, you know, marched into one of them, and I don't remember which one it was, but yeah, we had to sleep there. And when we came out, there were branches all over. There were windows out of the cars just, just missing. It was just a really big mess. And we were just shocked at what we saw. And so...
What year was this?
This was 1971.
Okay.
No, 1969. And it hit in... let's see. I left to go on leave before my... It hit in July. It hit in July. July of 69 it hit. And Katrina was, they compared it to Camille and Hurricanes Andrew, or that, I don't know, there was one other hurricane that they compared Katrina. Katrina was a lot worse than Camille. Up until Katrina, Camille was one of the worst hurricanes that ever hit.
Yeah, I remember hearing about it when Katrina hit, that they were comparing it to Camille.
Yeah. Camille was really, it was really a bad hurricane. So, yeah, I was right in the middle of it.
Was that pretty scary?
No, we knew we were safe in the shelter. And, one girl, I don't know if we were supposed to keep our windows open or closed, but she did the opposite. And she forgot to do whatever it was that we were supposed to do, and her room was devastated. Her mattress was soaked. Her window was broken. Everything in her room was just totally destroyed, and so they had to repair the window, and they had to get her a new bed and all of this stuff and everything. She lost everything in that room, so... I think she was able to salvage some of her clothes, and stuff like that, because they were in the dressers. But like the mattress, anything that was open, it was just totally destroyed.
Well, so when you were in casual, you were just waiting for your orders, or did they train you more while you were there?
Right, I was waiting for my orders, and then because it took so long, I was the last one to go. Vivian was next to the last to go, and then I was the last one to go. And so they first had orders for me to become an inventory management specialist, and I was afraid of that. And so I had either to go into base ops or just, administration for typing and, just office work, and I chose office work. My regret is that I didn't go into inventory management, because that would have been... when I got out, I would have gotten really a good job.
What
with
is
that training.
Inventory management exactly?
They inventory, like at the end of the year, they inventory things that companies have, and it has to do with taxes and all of that.
Right, how much everything they have.
Yeah.
So what did you end up going into?
Just regular office work.
Okay.
What they call the 702. It was just office work, and then I ended up going to Plattsburgh Air Force Base, and stayed there for about 2 years, and then I got orders to go to Germany.
Tell me about the Air Force Base that you were on. Like, what was the facilities like? And
Plattsburgh was really a nice base. It was really a nice base. I worked with really good, good people, and I really enjoyed it there. I had a really good supervisor, and that really helped a lot. And the important phone numbers that everybody needed. I had memorized in my head. So instead of people looking up phone numbers, they would come to me and say, "Well, what is the number of so and so?" And I just would rattle off the numbers, because I had them all in my head. And so I didn't have to look at the, I forgot what they call the book with the phone numbers.
The Rolodex?
I forgot what they call it. The roster. The telephone roster. And so that, and the first sergeant, instead of looking it up, he would come out of his office, come into the orderly room, and come in and ask for the number, and then go back in instead of looking it up, but he always asked me what the number was. And so I thought that was kind of interesting. And my husband does the same thing, he'll ask me, "What is the number of sons?" Because I have a lot of numbers memorized, so he doesn't have to look them up. So he does that now. So I'm really good at numbers. Other things I can't remember, but numbers I can remember.
So did you do office work when you were at the Air Force Base?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I took care of the typing, the filing, updating the regulations, taking out the things that were obsolete and putting in the new regs, the changes to the you know, the regulations and all of that. Took care of that. All the books on that.
Did you like being stationed there?
Yeah, I really did. And then I got to Germany, and I ended up in, I don't know what the office was. It was supply. It was, they handled supplies. And I didn't like it there because the two guys that I worked for were really, really not very nice men. And so I went to the main office and I said I needed to go somewhere else. And I told them the situation. They said, well, that's not a good situation. So they put me in personnel. So I worked in personnel the rest of the time.
So where in Germany was this?
Lindsay Air Station. It was right in the middle of downtown Wiesbaden. It's Wiesbaden. Wiesbaden. The W is pronounced like a B. Like, you'll see, like, Wilhelm, you know, the name Wilhelm, it's Wilhelm. Mm-hmm. You know, and the V is pronounced like an F, which is really funny. But an F is pronounced as an F. I don't understand that. But anyway, there's a difference, and I don't know what the difference is. But so I was stationed at Lindsay Air Station. It was a really good place. And that was the headquarters of USAFE. That was the whole, you know, the whole Europe. They were the headquarters of all of Europe.
What is USAFE?
United States Air Force. I forgot what the E stood for. In Europe. United States Air Force in Europe, or something to that effect. And, you know, the general was there, and that was the headquarters. And they took care of all the bases in Europe.
So do you have any memorable experiences from being stationed
there? Yeah, I met my husband there. But I decided that I wasn't going to get married until after I was out of the Air Force. I decided I wasn't going to marry an Air Force man. I was going to marry a civilian, but I ended up marrying an Air Force man. So that was a lot of fun, you know, looking around and seeing the beautiful things there, and the castles, and the Rhine River, because we were right, you know, near the river, and seeing all the great vineyards along the hills, you know, by the river. And so that was really nice. I really enjoyed that.
So how did you meet your husband? Was he on the base with you?
I met him at church. So that's a great place to meet a guy, is the church. So, so I was dating another guy at the time. And I was dating his best friend. And then that fizzled out. We decided just to part as friends. You know, we were good friends and everything. It wasn't a bad separation or anything like that. And then Jim started asking me out. And then we ended up, after I got out of the service, I got out in May of 73. And he was leaving Germany 6 weeks after me to be stationed at Robins Air Force Base in Georgia. So during that 6 months, from May to November, we were planning our marriage by mail, which is horrible. Bad way, terrible way to plan a wedding. But we did have the telephone, too, so that helped a little bit. But we wrote letters a lot, you know, and planned our marriage by mail, I ended up getting married in November of 73. So
was it different being a woman on the base in Germany? Were you treated differently?
At that time, with the Equal Rights Amendment, a lot of guys expected us to do things. Some guys didn't treat us very well. You know, some girls there had a bad reputation, you know, and I decided I was going to have the opposite reputation. And so one really neat experience that I had is I took there was a phone in the hallway, and so all the guys would call on that phone, and then, you know, we'd call for the girl, and then they'd come out of their room and take their phone call and stuff. And so we'd have to wait for the phone to be available for us to use it if we needed to use the phone. And so this one guy called for this one girl, and she said, you know, and I said, I'm sorry, she's not here, you know, because I checked twice at the door, and she wasn't there. And he said, okay, will you go out with me? And I said, well, I'm sorry, but I don't go out with guys I don't know. So he says, well, if I go over there and I meet you, he said, will you go out with me? And I said, well, I don't know, it depends if I like you or not, you know. And so he came, and I met him, and I was on the second floor. My room was on the second floor. And I looked down the window, and I saw him, and we talked for a while and asked questions and things like this, you know. And finally I said, okay, I'll go out with you. And so I went out with him, and it was a bad date. It was really a bad date. He ended up being like about five inches shorter than me. You know, I mean, maybe not that much, but I mean, it was a drastic difference. And he was so embarrassed to go out with me because I was taller than him, and I was embarrassed to go out with him because he was shorter than me. Really, that doesn't make any difference, but at that time, it did to me. So anyway, and he says, and at that time, guys stopped asking me out a lot. I didn't get very many dates anymore. And he says, and after he found out what my name was, He says, do you find that you're not getting very many dates? And I said, yeah. And he said, do you know why? And I said, no, why? And he says, because you're known all over the base. Because he says, you're known as the girl that won't give. And so the guys did a lot of the. I end up going out with really nice guys, you know, and so it weeded out a lot of the bad guys. So. And I ended up marrying my husband, so that was really nice. And the base, you could walk around the base in about 40 minutes. That's how small Lindsay Air Station was.
Even though it was the headquarters in Germany?
Mm-hmm. It was really a small little base right in the middle of town.
And you were telling me a little bit before we started the recording about, like, expectations that some of the male officers had of you that weren't...
Oh, the NCOs, they expected me to do a lot of things that the men would do, and at that time, you know, the women didn't do those things. Oh, I got to back up. When I went to tech school, before I went into administration, I got to back up to that. And I left casual, and I went into going into air traffic control. And that's another name for them were the scope dopes. That was their nicknames because they would look at this radar thing and see the little bleeps as that little line went around. And then there was a plotter over there, and then you would give coordinates of all these planes that were on this, I forgot what they call them. Anyway, this little scope. And so that you had to go behind the plotters. We had to take turns being a plotter, and you had to go behind, and you had to write backwards. So like if you write an L, instead of making the L go to the right, you had to make it go to the left, so the other person can read it on the one looking at the radar scope. That's what that's called. The radar scope. They had to be able to read it, so you had to write backwards, because you were behind it. And they took all the WAF out of that. They said you cannot go into that, except for one girl they left in there because her grades were really high. She was getting like 95s and not hundreds on her tests and all of this stuff. And the girls weren't doing very well in that field. But now the girls can go anywhere now. But at that time, they took all the WAF out of there because a lot of them were not doing very well. And I was one of them.
Was WAF?
Women in the Air Force is what it stands
for. Okay.
And then right after that is when I went into the administration. I had my choice of base ops or administration.
So did they train you in administration, or did they just kind of give you the orders and tell you to...
You mean after I was out of I'm sorry.
Did you get, advanced training in what you're supposed to do for the administrative staff?
No, I just went in and I already knew how to type. And so they didn't have to send me anywhere to learn how to type. I already knew how to type. I learned that in high school.
Okay.
And so I knew how to file and all that stuff. So, because I took office classes in high school. So, I had that already. So I didn't have to do training. So basically, on-the-job training is what it was.
Yeah.
OJT is what they called it.
Got an abbreviation for everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, and that's when I ended up at Plattsburgh after. That's why I had to wait for my orders. So, anyway, so that was interesting. The only thing that I really liked when I was in the air traffic control was the weather, learning about the weather. That was really interesting. And my grades were really high in that block. They called it blocks. There were certain blocks of different things that you had to learn, and one of them was weather. And I did really good on the weather. And that was really interesting. And I wish now that I would have gone into meteorology.
Yeah.
And learning about the weather and becoming a meteorologist.
So was it just like how the weather affects the airplanes? Is that what they were teaching
yeah.
you?
Yeah, that was one of the things that we had to look at on the scope. We had to look at all those kind of, have all those things in play when we looked on the scope as far as the degrees, on the radar scope they were. And they had to plot it on the plotter, the big board. I don't know how they do it now, if they do it the same way or not. But at that time it was really interesting, but I didn't like that kind of a job.
Is it too high pressure?
Well, you look 8 hours, the scope all day long for 8 hours a day. It's it gets kind of hard on your eyes after a while.
Yeah.
So I'm glad I didn't stay in it.
So what were your duties in Germany when you were on the base there?
It was just basically you go to work and then you have the rest of the time, just like a regular day. I lived in the barracks and got up early in the morning, got dressed, went to work, and then I had the rest of the day, went out on dates or whatever I wanted to do. And we had to eat in the, in the chow halls and our mess halls, and so that's where we had our breakfast, lunch, and dinner, I usually didn't go in for breakfast. I usually just had something in my room, and then I just went to lunch and dinner.
So are there any memorable people from that in Germany that you can think of?
No, I just got to see the main general one time. I forgot his name. I got to see him that was all over USAFE, so I got to, see him. He was a 4-star general, so that was really nice. I got to see him. Never got to talk to him, but I got to see him.
So did the war in Vietnam affect you at all, that was going on?
No, I was, what would they call it? Vietnam era veteran. Mm-hmm. So I was in the Air Force during the Vietnam War, but I wasn't in a combat area. So I was a Vietnam era vet, is what they called us, because we were not in Vietnam. Or had anything to do, with going on remotes or anything like that. That's another thing. At that time, the women were not allowed to go on remote tours.
What is a remote tour?
It's a base where it's way out in the boonies, and there's really nothing there other than just being on a little base. And usually those bases are just for a year or 15 months, sometimes 15 months at that time. And women weren't allowed to go on any of those. And during the 15-month list, that those can be accompanied or unaccompanied, which means you can have your wife and children there on the 15-month ones. The one-year ones, they were not allowed to go. And also at that time, women, if they got pregnant, they had to automatically get discharged from the Air Force if they got pregnant at that time. So I wish it was still that way now.
Yeah.
That's my own opinion. I am not a women's lib, you know, libist, so. There was one gentleman that I heard talk, and he said, if you treat a woman with respect and love, there's no need for the Equal Rights Amendment, because she'll, you know, if you treat her like a queen, she won't need it. And it's true. My husband does that. He treats me like a queen.
Okay.
I forgot what I left off.
We were talking about women's lib and treating women like a...
Oh, yeah. And that one gentleman, he said, if you treat a woman like a queen, there's no need for, you know, the women's lib movement. And, you know, if men treat women decent. And that's the way my husband treats me, and it's really wonderful, you know. And so, so I do not believe in women's lib. So, you know. So that's just my own opinion, but, and so, well, and that's one of the things that was very difficult in the Air Force for me, was because I was not a women's libist, and so that was really hard.
You mean relating to other women?
No, having, well, sometimes the women, and then sometimes the men's attitude at the time, you know, and at the time, the men with the women's lib, they didn't know how to act, you know, what they should do. Should they treat you like a lady or not? Because some women were offended because you were treating them like a lady. And so it was kind of a really big adjustment even at that time for the guys. You know, so, and even to this day, really, it's still hard for them to really know where they stand, you know. So, anyway, that's my own opinion.
So. Well...
And then I left Germany May 17th, and then that's when I was discharged. It was May 20th. I was discharged on that day.
What year was this?
1973.
Okay.
I don't know where.
We were talking about how you just were leaving Germany.
Yeah, I left May 17th. I got on the plane, and then I got to McGuire Air Force Base and went through the discharge, and then I got on a bus and I went home.
Back to New York?
Mm-hmm. Back to Syracuse, New York. Mm-hmm.
Was your family really happy to see you?
Yeah.
Yeah. So were you gone for 4 years, or had you been able to go home and visit?
When I was in Plattsburgh, I was only like 200 miles away, and so I would go on three-day weekends. I would go and visit my parents all the time. So I always, you know, visited family, you know, during the first two years. Because I was only somewhere around 200 miles away from my home, so... I got to see my family a lot.
Yeah, well, that was nice.
Yeah.
So, do you stay in touch with anybody from the military? Like, I think you mentioned Vivian, and...
I lost track of her. I'm trying to find her. I don't know how to go about doing that, but I want to see how she's doing and everything. She's the main one that I want to really find. And then, last month, his best friend, my ex-boyfriend, called, and so anyway, his wife and us are going to get together sometime in the next couple of months, and they live in Kansas and we live here in Wisconsin, so we're going to meet somewhere halfway and just do something fun.
That's
so
cool.
Yeah.
Was there anything especially challenging about your military service?
Just, having to deal with the Equal Rights Amendment when I was not a women's livist, that was the hard thing for me. That was the main thing. That's where I had a lot of problems. And the last job that I had, and those guys that were expecting me to carry that huge box downstairs.
You're talking about the trash that you couldn't, mm-hmm. you couldn't lift?
Right. I mean, the baskets themselves were heavy because they would have several cards in these baskets. And those cards, when you get a big basket full of those things, those are really heavy. I mean, they are heavy baskets. And I had to empty 8 baskets into that big box. Because I, not only the other, 5 guys that I worked with, that's not counting in that same office, the first sergeant and my OIC, or the officer in charge. So really there were 6 guys in there, plus me. But I didn't count them the first time, the first sergeant and the officer in charge. And that was hard, you know, dealing with these men, because they were really hard on me. Because they knew that I was not a women's libist, and they were making life difficult for me.
Giving you things they knew that you couldn't do.
Yeah. And they would say things to me. And in fact, one time they were saying something to me, and the phone rang, and it happened to be my husband calling me about, you know, just really quick, and he heard them in the background talking to me really horribly. And he called the first sergeant or the officer in charge, I don't know which one he called, and told him what was going on.
Did it stop then?
So. For a while. Then it picked up again. That was hard. But it did get a little bit better, but it still wasn't, it went down, but it kind of went about maybe 3/4 of the way up, you know, so it was hard. That was my main challenge that I had.
Did it get in the way of you doing your job, do you feel like?
Oh, no. I left because my discharge was due to, you know, I didn't re-enlist. Mm-hmm. So I knew I was going to get out around May 20th or May 22nd.
Is that part? Would you have re-enlisted, or were you planning on?
I was planning on getting out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did not want to stay in the Air Force, so I was planning on getting out. And seeing that I had office experience, I figured I could, you know, get a good job then, and because I had the experience, you know, 4 years of office work, and so I knew that I would be able to get a good job.
So what did you do when you got home? Did you get a good job?
Yeah, I ended up working at Hancock. They called it Hancock Field at the time. They changed it to Hancock Air Force Base. And that was between Syracuse and the town of North Syracuse. And so it wasn't very far from my home, and I worked there on base.
Oh, so you worked on a military base?
Yeah.
You just weren't enlisted?
Mm-hmm. Right. I was working as a civilian.
So how long did you do that for?
I did that for the 6 months that I was, before I got married. And I guess it was about 5 months. They were trying to talk me into re-enlisting during all that whole time. They wanted me to re-enlist, and and it would have been nice, you know, because I would have gotten a bonus and all that stuff, but I wasn't really that interested. I wanted to get married. You know, we were planning on getting married, and so I was going to be going to another Air Force base. I was going to be, living at Robins Air Force Base, where he was stationed.
Oh, because he was still in the service,
mm-hmm.
when you got married?
Yeah, so then I became a dependent. What they call a dependent, yeah.
So did you move around a lot then?
From Robins, then we went to, he was in the band, and he auditioned for the USAFE band, the United States Army Air Force Academy band, it was a special band, and he auditioned, and we ended up going to Colorado Springs for 2 years. Then he decided to cross-train into computers. So we were going to be stationed at Langley. But while he was in tech school, there was a guy that wanted to go to Langley because his family was there. We didn't want to leave Colorado Springs because all our stuff was still there. And they said, wouldn't it be really funny if we, you know, if I got Peterson and you got Langley? And so anyway, that's exactly what happened. So then they decided they were going to swap. And they had a swap program. And then you would have to pay they would take you as far as where they were going to send you, but then you would have to pay the rest of the way. But it turned out the Air Force saved money because our stuff was still in Colorado Springs. He wanted to go to Langley, where his wife was and everything like that. So everything worked out. So he was going home. We were going back where... So we spent another 2 years in Colorado Springs. So a total of 4 years there. And but we didn't have to pay a cent because the Air Force saved money. So we just had our stuff delivered into another... He was stationed... then he got stationed at Peterson Air Force Base, which is 20 miles away from the Academy in Colorado Springs. And... he worked at Peterson, but we lived on the Academy because there wasn't enough of base housing on Peterson. So and they had an overage of housing on the Academy, so anybody who worked at Peterson, you know, could live on the Academy also.
Did you like living military life like that?
Yeah, as a dependent, yeah. I didn't mind it at all.
Yeah. Have you joined any veterans organizations or gone to any reunions?
No. No, I've never done any of that.
So, looking back, how do you feel about your service, yours?
It was a good experience. You know, it was an eye-opener, and, you know, and I learned a lot. You know, I learned a lot of good things, and some of the bad things, like where the last place that I worked was kind of rough, but other than that, it was a really good experience. Especially the time that I was in Europe, and I got to travel around and see all the things there, and it was really nice.
Was there a specific place that you went that was really stands out in your mind?
I really was. The only place that I really wanted to go, I didn't really want to go travel that much. But the only place I wanted to go to Switzerland, and I wanted to go to to Holland. Those were the two places that I really wanted to go, and I got to go there, and I was happy. But a lot of times they had tours. You know, you take a vacation, you can go on a tour. You know, they had tours set up, and you could sign up for these tours and go to Great Britain or go to... Italy or wherever, you know, and I did go on a tour to see Switzerland, and then I got other times I got to go to Switzerland too, and when Jim and I were dating, another girl and I, we went we just drove around there, because I just love Switzerland. And so we got to stay there. And I got to stay in this one house, and this lady rented rooms out, and it was really neat because I sleep under this big, huge, thick down comforter, and I it was a cold night, I remember that, I went with another couple. This is a different time. I went with another couple when I was babysitting. And so while they were doing some things, I was taking care of their kids. So while I was in there, and I got into this one room, this one lady was renting this room, and I got under this comforter, and I just remember it was so high I couldn't even see the window. It was so thick. And I remember it was white and it was thick and it was just so warm and cuddly. I loved it. So someday I want to really get a really good damn comforter. That's one of my goals. But they're expensive, the kind that I want to get.
Yeah.
I want to get a thick one like I saw there. So, I mean, it was really thick. Not the thin ones that you see here. It was really thick.
So you really got to see quite a bit of Europe then. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Travel quite a bit.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Oh, another thing I like to do is just go on what they call folks marches. The Germans, they would go and they would have these places that it was either 10 kilometers, 20 kilometers, or 30 kilometer walks. And because Germans love to walk. And so you would go and you would pay to walk a certain course. And that money would go to a charity.
Huh.
And
cool.
So instead of some places here, you know, somebody would come and say, well, so, for so many miles I walk, will you pay such, you know, so much money if I walk, you know, or do, you know, swim so many laps or whatever. But you went and you did your own walking. And that money went to charity. And so I went on one of those, and I loved doing that. So that was fun. And every so often, they would have little water stops where you could get a drink of water. And then you would go on to, you know, until the very end. And usually ended up where you started from, so you'd get to your car. But it was like in a big circle. It was fun.
So did you get to see some of the landscape of Germany then by doing that?
Yeah, the woodsy areas and things like that. Some of it was in woods and then some of it was down in town, you know, and you'd just follow the path that they had laid out. And it was a lot of fun. And you had a map so you knew exactly where to go. You know, so, you know, at this stop, you know, you turn here and you turn there and so you knew exactly where you were.
Did you go on those by yourself, or did you go with someone?
I usually went with somebody else, because it was more fun to go with somebody else and talk while you were walking.
Yeah.
So I went on a lot of those.
Okay, well, is there anything else that you can think of that I haven't asked you about that you want to share with us?
That's about it. I've got a very, uneventful time, I guess. I know.
No, but it was interesting.
But it was fun. It was fun.
Yeah,
most of the time, except that one job I had.
Yeah, well, I think the woman's lib aspect is the most interesting thing, like how that was, you know, played out at that time in history and how you were affected by it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I was not a women's libist, and I figured, I remember Sophia Loren. She's an actress. I don't know if you know who she is. Someone asked her one time, they asked her, what do you think about the women's rights movement? And she said, I don't believe in it. She says, why should I lower myself to their level? You know, the men's level. And so, yeah. And so that's kind of the attitude that I have. You know, I had the same attitude that she had. Why lower myself to them? You know.
Did you make a lot of other women friends, or was that kind of at odds with what they believed in?
No, luckily a lot of the girls that I knew felt the same way that I did. So there were a lot of girls in the Air Force that did not believe in the women's movement either. So those were usually the ones that, you know, and I got along with the other ones too, the ones that believed in it too. And we got along fine. You know, in the barracks and everything. So there's no problem there.
All right. Well, I think that's about it. Thank you for your time.
Well, you're welcome.
I want to make a slight correction.
Right. After I got out of basic training, I went into casual, waited for my orders, and that's when I went into air traffic control. And that's when I went to Keesler Air Force Base in Biloxi. And then when they took all the WAF out of the air traffic control, the radar part of it, I went back into something like casual, similar like that, and then I had to wait for my orders to go. I had my choice of base ops or administration, and I picked to go in. I'm into administration.
And where were you when the hurricane hit?
In Keesler Air Force Base.
Okay.
In Biloxi. Okay. Which is really close to Gulfport, which where the eye of your hurricane was. So we were just... Gulfport and Biloxi, are, they border each other.
Okay, thank you. Okay.